We've passed this little half hour kind of like a kidney stone together. You and I, Dave Lefkowitz, and my co-host, Mr. Jeffrey Goodman, who's just sneezed, and now he's back on mic.
So that means it's the truth.
What?
You sneeze on the truth.
Yes.
Anyway,
I'm already
This
lost.
Is a little abbreviated version of our lately departed four-hour show.
super exclusive multi-mega happy big-time show on WGBB is Gujo. So, yeah, well, we still sometimes do, when we get a chance, a longer
and,
version.
And of course, if there are radio stations out there who need a drive time slot filled, I think the big time would be perfect for you.
I totally agree. Jeff and myself, when we're awake, are actually a little bit, I'm looking at Jeff's eyes, and my eyes are like,
well,
we're trying.
Excuse, David. I have to finish off a bat mitzvah, and I'm leaving for Thailand in about 24 hours.
My excuse is I'm working on a dozen different projects, and I have a funeral day, so it's like, it's been a day. So anyway.
Oh, funeral.
Those are fun. It's kind of,
Do you have to shovel the dirt and everything?
You didn't have to. It's a mitzvah.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not exactly, in fact, there are very few things I'm going to remember, hopefully, about any funeral, but this one, I will remember that, I grab the shovel, I'm putting it in the earth, and I go, and my first shovelful invariably overshoots the grave, because it's not a very wide thing, and it's just, it lands on, like, the shoes of the people standing on the other side of the grave. I don't think I hit the rabbi or anything, but I was like, oh, I'm literally like, and I was like, oh, damn.
My father's graveside, Charlie was there, and Charlie, like...
Jeff's friend, Charlie Gross, yeah.
And Charlie loves to do the mitzvah, any mitzvah.
Yeah.
So he's there shoveling, and we're all there crying, and he's shoveling, and just is not stopping shoveling and I'm like ready to push Charlie in. So stop shoveling, Charlie.
You only get one mitzvah. It isn't a bigger mitzvah if you shovel 20.
Well, no, but it's supposed to,
Well, I was going to do 18. That was the thing in my head. I was going to do 18 shovelfuls, but I didn't even count when I started doing it.
Well, anyway, but then everyone starts to get a little annoyed at Charlie, and then luckily my stepbrother told him, why don't you move to the top of the grave? Because he was like the first one to shovel, and he's like burying him already.
Well, no, it's funny because the rabbi said in the beginning, because last time I was at a funeral, he made it clear what you do is, the mitzvah is to shovel, do a shovel on the earth and then stick the thing in the ground. You don't hand it to somebody. You stick the shovel back in the earth when you're done, and then somebody takes it so they don't feel obligated. It's a custom thing.
Okay.
So, but he's encouraged people to do a bunch, because it's, you figure, oh, it's just this hole, but it takes a while with three shovels and people going. It takes about 15 minutes to cover up what a backhoe did, probably in about a minute and a half.
You did the whole grave?
Yeah, you don't just shovel a thing of earth, one or two things.
Oh, we did. We didn't, shovel the whole thing. But Charlie, oh my God, he wouldn't stop. It was, it was amazing. And he, it was very nice that he did it, but wow, oh wow. Oh, Dave's very excited. Someone just called.
Yes, let's see if you can recognize. Can you recognize this voice, Jeff Goodman? Oh, let me try
not
that
if
again.
I can't hear it.
Not if I don't put up the pod. Can you recognize this voice, Jeff Goodman?
Jeff, you twit, where were you tonight?
That's Charles Gross.
I know that.
Yeah.
Where was I supposed to be, Charlie?
You were supposed to be at Lincoln Center with me.
For what?
Serious ones.
Oh.
That's right.
Oops.
Oh, well.
Jeff was a naughty, naughty boy. See, Jeff and Charlie are theater critics, and they co-host a Manhattan television show called Two on the Isle. That's been on the air for about 12 years now, right?
A lot longer than that.
How many years?
I think we're in our 16th season.
But for theater critics, that's 47.
in critic years. So, Charlie and Jeff often go to the theater together because for various reasons. And Jeff apparently
forgot.
But
we like each other's company.
Well, that too.
That's how we got started. That's where the whole Two on the Isle thing came about. Jeff and I were writing for publications. I was writing for one in New Jersey, Jeff for Long Island. And we'd see each other in the theater, and we discussed the show. And I kept saying for years, Jeff, we should do what those guys at the movies do. We should have have a show that covers the theater. And ultimately, that's just what happened. As a matter of fact, our latest episode is now on YouTube.
Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, we're with our special guest critic, David Lefkowitz. Perhaps
Who's
you've
that?
Heard of him.
Who's that?
Some idiot.
He's a popular radio celebrity in Long Island.
Thank you, yeah.
Anyway, and
Not
you can hear us talk about the strike.
Right, okay, which is still going, yeah.
It's unfortunately still going on, but also reviews of Cyrano, Young Frankenstein, and The Ritz.
Did you hear us talk about it before, Charlie?
No, I've been having trouble getting the streaming.
Really?
Yeah.
According to our little handy monitor here, the streaming is working just fine.
Well, there may be a problem with my computer then, but I've been clicking on your on the
Charlie,
station
I keep
website.
Telling you that the Commodore 64 does not get that.
It's the way you point the joystick. It's like an antenna. You have to curl it around. You have to take a little tin foil and put it behind.
I don't know. Maybe my antivirus software is blocking it. I don't know.
Oh.
The firewall. But I cannot get it. So actually, I did not hear you guys until I called in.
Oh well. Well, you missed really the best part of the show.
Truly.
Pretty much hang up now. No. So how are you, Charlie? How was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was wonderful. I went to see the Macy's parade.
Really? Okay.
Because it's only a couple blocks from your house.
Well, that's true. Very crowded this year because of the wonderful weather.
Yeah.
And we
did they miss me being there?
We actually
they had enough floats. No, I'm sorry. That was mean.
But I'm a big balloon.
Oh, that's right. You make the balloons. So
well,
you
here's a trivia question for
yeah.
you. You know, most of the Macy's parade balloons are either originals or based on cartoon characters or corporate symbols. There was one balloon that was actually based on a real person. Do you know who that was?
Maggie Chatterley.
No.
Let's see.
Based on a real person.
Malcolm X.
Wasn't there that thing that was based on a sculpture? There's the new one, right? Is it one of the new ones?
You may be talking about the rabbit that they had this year.
Yeah.
That I don't know, but that was not based on a real person,
okay.
No.
A real person balloon?
A real person, yes. He was a Broadway star.
And they make a balloon out of him?
Yes, they did.
I didn't know John Lithgow had a balloon.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't be long to... well, no. Let's see. Broadway
I will
star.
Tell you this
oh,
is well
Cohen?
Before our time.
Cohen?
No.
But
you're in the right era.
Is it like a Charlie Brown?
Well, Charlie Brown would not be considered a real person.
No.
I believe they have had a Charlie Brown balloon. They had the Snoopy balloon this year.
Let's see. A Harvey Fierstein balloon. If you blow him up, I'm not even going to go there.
An Ethel Merman balloon.
No, she looks like a man. It's a he, right? We're talking about a he?
It is a he, yes.
A he of the Broadway era, Little Johnny Jones?
No.
Well, again, that would be Cohan's. And again,
yeah,
Little Johnny Jones was not a real person. He was a character in one of Cohan's musicals.
Mickey Rooney.
Okay, no, it wasn't him.
Let's put on an air show.
It was a front stage performer. Oh, Jolson? No, they don't have a Jolson balloon. Close. A Broadway performer.
Yes.
Joel Grey.
Who?
Joel Grey.
I think you're a little... I don't think Joel Grey was quite Mel Jolson.
Older than Mickey Katz, even. Who are you? Sid Romberg? Who was...
Say it, Charlie. Who is it?
Well, no, initials or a hint.
All right. Let's see. Well,
you know,
he was known for making Whoopi.
Oh, there's an Eddie Cantor. There would be an Eddie Cantor float.
Where is there an Eddie Cantor balloon?
A balloon? Really?
Mm-hmm. I didn't see Eddie Cantor floating down Broadway.
Well, I don't think they've used that balloon in some time. I'm not sure.
We're thinking of which one there was this year, Charlie.
Well, I didn't say that it was this year.
You implied.
I didn't.
He always does that.
I
didn't
know that. I said there was one balloon in the history of it that was made based on a person.
Well,
it wasn't this year.
We knew it was in the history of the whole thing, but we were kind of assuming it was a recent... How long ago was the Eddie Cantor balloon? Like 30 years ago?
Well, how long ago was Eddie Cantor, a big Broadway star?
Like 50 years ago.
Exactly.
More. You talked.
I have nothing to say today. Just hang up
Eddie
on him.
Eddie Cantor balloon. Good Lord.
Well,
I
mean, who else was the big star in Broadway in the 20s?
Shut up, Charlie.
Jolson.
It's Sunday night, 11 o'clock, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, the station that serves your community Chinese food and ribs. Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, swirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the 248th episode of Dave's Gone By.
Do you know what that means?
What does it mean, Jeff?
We're doubling every number.
Because double one is two, double four is four, double two is four, and double four is eight. Jeff is this numerology kind of person. He finds these things that only he sees in numbers, and then shares it with us. Jeff being Jeff Goodman, my good friend, and my guest co-host on this episode of Dave's Gone By, as he very often is.
That you know, it can't happen again for a long time.
What, two? Well, it would have to be four, well, no, it would, 480, no. Yeah, it would be a long time, you're right.
Can't even be 369.
Well, let's just start doing one point, no, you couldn't. You really could. Hey! That's interesting. Kind of. Not really, but a little. But I'm being nice, which is something I'm not always. Anyway, I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Did I say that? And did I say that this is a mix of comedy, talk, radio, music, interviews, all sorts of cool stuff that we do every Sunday night.
So when is the next one, Dave?
On WGBB. What? The next, what? Probably. I don't have time to think of in terms. I'm not a number
more.
Person.
1, 2, 4, 8 will be the next one.
1, 2, because it'd be 6, 24 would be the doubles. What?
Because everything over 3, if you use 3, it would be 3, 6, 12.
Uh-huh.
And that's over 3,000.
You've lost me already, and I don't have time for this. But I do have time to tell everybody what's going to be on this episode of Dave's Gone By.
On the doubling episode.
On the doubling episode, which, by the way, is brought to us by our sponsors.
I have no idea who they are.
Hewlett Minuteman Press. 1315 Broadway.
Would they be the Copy Kings of Broadway?
They really would be. And they're kings for you because 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press in Hewlett, Long Island.
And by the way, you know, I heard mortgages rock.
They do. And you know how you can find out about that?
.com.
That's right. Their website, mortgagesrock.com. How you can get loans and mortgages and also learn how to be a broker and get mortgages and financing for your friends and your family. MortgagesRock.com. Also, this program is brought to us by the Bible of Broadway.
Never heard of it.
Yes, you, well, no, you've heard the actual name.
Performing Arts Insider.
That's right. It's a name, although it has had different names over the years. It is a journal that has been around.
It's a name you can trust.
For 64 years. It was founded basically to give people in the theater industry the way of knowing what's on Broadway, who's there, how to contact the managers, the producers, the agents.
Good job in that.
It's all in Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. And our last sponsor of the evening is the one and only Fancy Schmancy Balloons, which does...
I have no idea.
Which is a big problem because Jeff actually is the founder and proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons, which people can contact at 516-797-3229. And why should they do that?
I have no idea.
Why are you suddenly falling out on me? Why you had a little bit of energy before, and now you are completely like stone dead. You're like the troll in Wind in the Willows, except he was kind of lively, wasn't he? Anyway, 516-797-3229 for all your party decorating needs. Anyway, those are our sponsors. Let me tell you what's going to be on the program. We have Charles Cochran. Now, he is really a legend in cabaret circles, and he's, well, the people that he's played with. I'm sorry to use that phrase. That's not
performed
quite,
with.
That's better. Yeah. I. Well, who knows who he's played with? But
well, he's had performing arts inside her.
Whoa! Very interestingly put. Wow, and he didn't hang up yet. Thank you so much, Charles. We'll be talking to him right after a commercial. But, man, this guy has known everyone from Nina Simone to Judy Garland. And he was once married to a Playboy playmate. So lots to talk about aside from the fact of the kind of music
that he plays. We have to ask him what month.
Yeah, right. I think it's March 1957. I actually had that written down.
Miss March.
He was married to Miss March, 1957.
Until he told her to take on Miss March.
Until the April, well, he said, well, April, May. I don't even know what that means. Anyway, we'll also be going inside Broadway. We'll talk a little bit about what's happening with the strike. And I'll review a couple of off-Broadway shows, including Sive at the Irish Repertory Theater. And and the Joy Luck Club at Pan Asian Rep. And I'll be talking about my trip to San Francisco. And I'll be talking about a... God, there goes my energy level. Talking about a death in my family this weekend and saying goodbye to my beloved Uncle Lester. So much to do. Let's go right to a commercial, then we'll play a song by Charles Cochran, and we'll be talking to him on this episode of Dave's Gone By. Don't go away. Minute Man, the superheroes of photocopying, printing and binding. Minute Man, no job too big or small. Minute Man, family run since 1975. Minute Man, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, next to the new Lowman shoe store. Tell them they've sent you for 10% off. Minuteman, hero of our photocopying dreams. Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on Compact Disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the news gone by, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
When I was 11 years old, I did something for the very, very first time that I was to do many, many, many times after that. I had a checking account, and I wrote a check out for $6, enough for an orchestra seat, and I sent it in a self-addressed stamped envelope to the box office of a Broadway show. The theater was the Music Box. The year was 1949. The show was Miss Liberty. The composer and lyricist of that show was Irving Berlin, and I sat in row J, a little bit over to the side. I just, you know, we remember things like that, and I just adored every moment of the show. And I remember particularly in the second act, a wonderful entertainer and actress who I was to work with later, Mary McCarty, strode down to the apron of the stage. She just had a fight with the juvenile, Eddie Albert. That shows you how many years ago this was. And I remember that even at 11 years old, I was very, very struck by her take on rejection. I've never forgotten it. This is the song she sang. Crocodile tears will not be shed, 'cause they're not for a fella like I'm. Now I recall what my aunt said when she married for the 20th time. Falling out of love can be fun after love is over and done. Now it's an awful blow, and although it's upsetting, so much you can do while you're forgetting. Falling out of love can be fun.
When you find your lover is gone, get a second wind and go on. There's an old affair that is there for renewing. In your grief, do you know what you're doing? Falling out of love can be fun. Soon you'll be swinging in a hammock on a porch. One arm wrapped around someone else, the other arm carrying a torch. Love can give a fellow a clout, and he may be down but not out. Get yourself a date, don't you wait till the count of ten. Then, falling out of love can be falling in love again. Falling out of love can be fun. If he leaves you after you've wed and the stork is over your head, soon you're gonna be with a she or a laddie. Smile as you go shopping for a daddy. Falling out of love can be fun. Soon all your worries and your fears. One eye winking at someone else, the other eye filling up with tears. When you find your love and romance gets a sudden kick in the pants, get yourself surrounded and bounded by lots of men. Then, falling out of love can be falling in love again and again and again. Falling out of love can be falling in love. Falling out of love can be falling in love again. I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times.
The voice and the piano of Charles Cochran, a pretty much legendary cabaret performer, and who is with us, joining us on this semi-legendary radio program, Dave's Gone By, with me and my guest co-host Jeff Goodman. Charles Cochran, welcome to the Daverhood.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be talking to you and having you play that record in particular.
Well, I remember getting the cast album to Miss Liberty a while back and being very pleasantly surprised, because everybody knows Irving Berlin from either White Christmas or, of course, Annie Get Your Gun. But then finding out some nuggets on that, I always like the little fish in a big pond.
Oh, me too. You know, I saw that show, as I said, at 11 years old, and it had a big advance hoopla. They were sort of expecting it to be a big hit, and it opened around the same time as South Pacific and got kind of eclipsed by that. And it was supposedly a disappointment, but boy, oh boy, my brother and I as kids saw that, and I thought it was terrific. I just loved it, and I love it to this day.
What's the first Broadway show you ever saw?
Bloomer Girl, 1945. Harold Arlen wrote the score with Yip Harburg, and Celeste Holm was the star. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
And it affected you in a way that...
Oh, yes, I fell in love with it. I had the 78 cast album, so I played that. That was given to me. I couldn't have been more than 8 years old, and I had a very sweet father and mother who encouraged, you know, they took me to see things like Annie Get Your Gun with Ethel Merman originally, and the revival of Showboat, which was also absolutely stupendous and beautiful, and Finian's Rainbow. So I saw all those shows,
uh-huh.
and I loved them. I wish I'd kept all the programs to them.
Hmm.
You know, it was fantastic.
And what was your favorite of them all?
Well, if you want to know the truth, I think that the two best ones that I saw were probably number one would be Gypsy.
Hmm.
1959, 58, something like that. I saw that about 8 times. And I also loved the revival in 1952 of Pal Joey with Vivian Segal and Harold Lang.
Yeah, that's one that they still have not been able to revive. They keep trying and they keep trying
No, I don't know what the problem is.
Thinking of Joey. And every Joey they try to get has been ducking out or has had other projects, I guess. But you, when did your cabaret career really start? When did you start playing piano, and when did you realize, hey, this is what I want to do?
Oh, I'll tell you, it actually started when I was 15. The professional piano playing and singing was on the radio. I was terrible, but I was 15, you know, and it was unusual for a kid to know these Cole Porter songs. And I was up in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I auditioned. In those days, the small radio stations, you know, had song spots and stuff. And Bob Crane, you know, of Hogan's Hero, before he was an actor, he was a DJ. And Wally Dunlap, and I auditioned for them. I went on their DJ program and sang a couple of songs, and they gave me a weekly spot. And that was how that started. And then there was early TV the next year in 53, I guess it was, and then I quit college when I was about 19, and I got an agent in New York and started working these.
What
really
college
dive,
did you leave?
Yeah.
What college did you quit?
The University of Miami, Florida.
And you just didn't feel like finishing out would be...
No, I thought 2 years was enough, you know. I enjoyed it. It gave me wonderful life experiences. I loved Florida, where I live now, you know.
No, but it's like I've just been watching the documentary on Jerry Herman, and he kind of objected to his parents sending him away to college because they knew he wanted to be a performer
and he was there when I was there, you know, and he wrote the school show,
yes,
sketchbook, and he was a real nice guy, sure.
But he said that he, in retrospect, he was thrilled that he did get to go to the college for the 4 years because it taught him stuff about theater, and he got to do every aspect of it.
Well, he had a little bit more maturity probably than I did. I just wanted to have fun. I was there with my brother. We were in the same class together because he'd been in the Navy before. So we had a little house for $150 a month with a swimming pool. I mean, it was amazing. We just had fun, and we were in the school plays and stuff like that. And I always was playing. I was more into theater at that time. And then, I don't know, I got back to New York in the summertime on vacation, and I got kind of antsy, and I went to an agent who booked all these places, and I got work almost immediately, and that started the chain reaction.
And work meaning? Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I wanted, because we were talking about West Palm Beach,
mm-hmm.
where you live now. I just wanted to know how Bonnie is.
Oh, bless your heart! Gosh, she is great. She's at a doggy camp at the moment. Which is really someone's house, who's in charge of Great Pyrenees Rescue. You know, those big white...
Oh, is that what you have?
No, she does. She's a lab mix, a lab border collie mix, only about 45 pounds. But her best buddies are all these huge beasts of dogs. And so Bonnie stays in this house with the woman and all these dogs. And she's actually, she just is thrilled when I take off and just before my plane goes, you know, the woman comes and brings her there, and she's just barking with glee at the thought of going away.
Kind of happy to go away, huh?
She's wonderful. She's my mascot when I put these cabaret acts together. She sits on the chair, and she's usually just fine, but if there's one ballad too many and the act drags, she feels, she goes right to the baskets and gets a squeaky toy, and that's my cue to...
I do that, too, if I'm in an audience and I'm getting a little bored with a cabaret show.
Yeah.
I bring my basket, I take it out of my knapsack, I get a squeaky toy, and if the performer hears, quick, 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 he knows he's got to do, like, put on your Sunday clothes or something like that, or
yeah.
really pep it up a little bit.
And Dave, there's also another very interesting thing about Charles.
Charles Cochran? What?
Yes, like, yes. He has a story about Misty, the song Misty.
Oh,
yes.
Don't get me started.
Yes,
I love that.
Getting started. This is the place to get started.
Oh, stop.
No, don't stop. Tell us about...
Oh, well, I worked a few unsavory joints in the old days.
Tell us.
Oh, they were kind of cheater's paradises, little boites. That's a very chic word for a place that isn't very chic.
That's what I call my house. Welcome to Chez Boite.
Oh, you know, I got a lot of particular kinds of requests. Autumn Leaves, as it were, they always said I play Autumn Leaves or play Misty. Well, that was, you know, those were, you know, there were some respectable people that liked those songs, very definitely, but the hookers always seemed to want to hear that.
Why?
To hear Misty. You tell me.
It's the hooker national anthem.
And the gangsters all wanted to hear more, you know, than the Dearest Love. That was the kind of mafia national anthem. Don't ask me why, or you're nobody till somebody loves you. And, you know, those are good tunes. I always complied.
And they were always good for $10, right?
Always.
Nice.
Oh, absolutely. And you know that there was that kind of thing, and then there were certain tunes that were just real big big money songs, you know, that you could get ten. Actually, You're Nobody Till Somebody Loves You, which was a very easy song to learn and play. That was always a $10 request number. And in 1957, which is when I started working these places.
$10.
Yeah, that was a very nice tip.
What did I make here?
Oh, don't inflate your salary like that.
But how did you go from playing the boite, the little cul-de-sac where
boite.
People go to, you know, meet with hookers, to another level of cabaret venue and performance?
Well, I just plugged away. And I'll tell you, I stayed sort of in those somewhat second-rate places for a long time. And finally...
They had to be fun.
Oh, sure.
Do you have any stories?
I was
from
young
that?
And I was in good health, and I had a very good tolerance for smoking too many cigarettes and having too many drinks. And I slept late, and I met an awful
story.
Lot of interesting people. And I worked, you know, I went from joints like the one I just mentioned, which I daren't mention the name of, although it's long gone, to the Copa Lounge, which was like that, only it was, you know, you had a better group of people come in.
Well, did you ever have a run-in with a gangster, or did you
never. Absolutely not, because I kept my nose clean about everything. I didn't...
But something funny must have happened.
What? Did something happen in that department? Gosh, I can't really think of anything, because I'd go to work, I'd have drinks if they were bought for me, I mixed with the people.
Well, that's actually... Let's,
and I'd go home, you know, I would not socialize.
But the thing
particularly,
is...
I'd go to some other bar, if the bars hadn't closed, I'd go to some other place to socialize. And then in those days, I don't know if it's true anymore, but there were these wonderful after-hours places, and there was a great one called the Mystique. Which was down on 49th Street and 2nd. It was in a brownstone. I'm sure that somebody who's listening in remembers the Mystique. And there were jazz musicians, and there were hookers, and there were drag queens, and there were just people, insomniacs, you know, and the most wonderful spectrum of people. No elevator, so you walked up three flights of stairs, and you kind of had to watch your P's and Q's. And there were stars that went there, you know, and it was a melting pot, and it would be open until dawn.
Wow.
And
it's different
drinks
New York,
were expensive.
No,
you know?
Just from personal, living in New York and growing up in the 80s, or like
it was,
you know,
still
hitting that late teens, early 20s in the 80s, that was like that, too. There were very much after-hours bars where, at that point, it was down towards the meatpacking district.
Oh, were they?
Yes, yeah, and all sorts of, you know, bars where people are just dancing on the bars and.
Oh God, you know. Unbelievable! And then
anything
you had to get
went.
Down three flights of stairs, so you kind of had to watch your footing, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but.
But speaking actually of losing the footing, not to dwell on this, but you keep mentioning the bars and the after hours and the drinking, you did that did become a problem at some point.
Yes, it took a long time to become a problem. It became a problem. Actually, I'd started going to the after hours places, and it was a problem then, or I wouldn't have gone to those. I would have gone home, I suppose. But, you know, your tolerance level can slip, and your brain cells can get affected, even at a fairly young age. By my early 30s, there were big telltale signs where I really couldn't remember whether I went to the Mystique or not the night before. And I also had a rather busy finger with the phone dial and always calling the one person I shouldn't. And, you know, it just got a little bit more serious and more serious before I could see it happening. It wasn't innocent drinking anymore. And it was, I would say, made worse by the fact that, like a lot of musicians, you know, there were, I got into the thing of pills to sleep with and lots of things, you know, that it was very easy to get those things just from your doctor. And I don't think it was known as much how bad the whole spectrum of all that stuff together was for you. And so the tolerance got worse and worse. But at 36, I packed it in, and now I'm coming up on almost 35 years, so I had a
so
life...
kind of like Elsie from Chelsea.
I never thought of that. It was.
Nice.
It was too much pills and liquor.
Liquor, yeah.
And you know, I was just one of the lucky ones that kind of got out, but it's weird that now, and I lead a very quiet life now with Bonnie down in West Palm Beach, I look back on those years with nostalgia. You know, I think of, I don't really...
Hookers and gangsters, you can't remember them.
Isn't that terrible? Hell, I really look back on those times when I would fall down the stairs at the Mystique onto the street and stuff like that. I think it was amazing. It was amazing.
Hey,
played the piano well.
Yeah, right.
Totally sloshed, right?
Well, you know something? After all, no, I only a couple of times got really out of control working. I was really a good professional. I didn't drink during the day. Can you believe that? And towards the end of my
drinking... Well, because you didn't wake up until 4 in the afternoon.
Right, exactly. But I had a deal with the bartenders where I would be given 7-Up for the first 2 hours of the job.
Smart.
And then vodka would be gradually poured into my drinks. And by the end, I was having doubles or triples and stuff like that. But if I didn't do that, I wouldn't remember doing my last set, you know. And I was very much, I wanted to get the songs right, and I wanted to really wow the crowd as much as I could. And I had to watch my P's and Q's a little bit, and then I could just be naughty as I can be after the gig was over.
I mean, let's face it, drinking's drinking, but theater is important.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
And besides, you know, I drink only Snapple, and I'm already half retarded just from that.
Please. I want you to know he's sitting here drinking O'Doul.
Oh, my
isn't that painful to think that that's what he's drinking?
Oh, my goodness. Why do you torture yourself like that?
I love that stuff. I'm addicted to it. Well, no, God forbid, no.
He's like little pansy drink, O'Doul.
Oh, I know it. I mean,
well, I put a little flour in it, so it's really—it's like a mimosa duels or something.
Well, you know,
like
nowadays, my martini is a cup of coffee in the evening, which really does give me a nice mood change.
There you go.
And
now let's talk about women, which may be an odd subject, but
his favorite month is March.
Yes.
Now tell me something: is that really true with Sally? I thought she was Miss February. It was Miss March.
Well, you would know better. You were married to her. Well, this is not necessarily a bio. There was an interview that you did with someone at the Palm Beach Post back in
the
very, very extensive and good interview.
Right.
But I got that from him, so it could be. I mean,
it might
I would trust
true
you.
Then. But I have that centerfold, which is really beautiful. And Sally,
pardon me, Charles, but you should Google your wife every now and again.
You know, we have a great relationship. We've been divorced for about 46 years, 45 years, and she lives in Santa Barbara. She was a movie actress. I mean, I worked places called the Mouse Trap and the Night Club, KNIGHTKLEB, but her pictures were called Viking Women and the Sea Serpent was one of her big ones.
The
unearthly Frankenstein's daughter, and, you know, she could have cared less about that stuff. She did it for the money. But she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She looks kind of like Stella Stevens, and she lives by the water in Santa Barbara.
Oh, Mazel. So why didn't it work out, if you don't like my...
Because we shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. You know, she lived next door to me. We drank together. She was gorgeous. I loved dancing with her.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, right?
Exactly. And rather than have us change our mind about it, we just rushed into it, you know, because if we'd waited any length of time, we would have realized, you know, this is insane.
Did you have a big wedding?
Oh, beautiful, fantastic wedding. Both of us had to be undressed and put to bed later, though. But
I have
a picture of us cutting the cake, looking like the cover of Bride and Groom magazine. We were young, and we, you know, we looked good. The wedding was fantastic. We had the Lou Levy trio, Peggy Lee's trio, playing out in the patio in Studio City, and fantastic array of guests.
Was Hef there? Well, no, she was a playmate.
She knew him. I didn't know him.
Right. Well, no, I don't imagine you in the pool there.
The grotto.
The grotto. Yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful. But it was down from then on in. And then we had a little bit of a period where a lot of things were very tense for a year or so, and then, you know, we couldn't resist, and one of us called the other. I forget what it was.
Now, you never married...
Thick as thieves afterwards.
Oh, that's great, but you never married... Like, I assume also you may have changed your preferences along the way.
It's never changed.
Well, that's for you to guess. You can talk to me on the air, and you come to your own conclusions, and I always say that, you know, your guess is probably right.
Charles, you can tell people what I... Never turn down any offers. Anyone who offers, you'll consider all offers, right?
Absolutely.
Well, here's a question: Did Judy Garland offer? Did Judy Garland offer?
Oh, did she? Oh my God. Well,
no, but Vincent Minnelli did.
I'm a gentleman, you have to remember that. I may have a checkered past.
Oh.
But I'm a gentleman. I don't kiss and tell or
there you go.
Well, at least
or even not kiss and tell.
Well, at least
you're never gonna talk about our little date, huh?
Our
date.
Oh.
No, but the thing is, the reason I brought that up is I just pulled Judy Garland's name out of the air. You were friends. And she actually...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. We couldn't have been anything else under those circumstances.
So you actually were a friend of Dorothy.
Oh, yes, indeed.
In a very direct way. Didn't she live with you for a short period of time?
Well, she used to stay with me periodically over about a 3-year period. I had a second bedroom in my rather sleazy apartment. Believe me, it wasn't chic, on Lexington Avenue and 84th. It was right near a fire station.
It's chic now. Same apartment, but now it's worth $5 million.
Probably, yeah. It was right near the fire station, so that the engines, the sirens would go off, the ambulances would pull out, and then my dog, a hound,
and then you'd pull out,
would start baying. It was the noisiest place you've ever known in your life.
And Judy would wake up and go, "Who the hell is that?"
Yeah, she didn't like dogs as much as Dorothy and Toto were. You know, it wasn't, it was not quite like that, but they abided each other.
So what was she like? What was it like, you know?
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart, of course funny, cared very, very much about music to the point that a lot of our time together was spent around the piano very often her singing, in spite of the long, long career that she had. She never got tired of singing at the piano or trying out material and playing some records. I don't think she was really into too many other singers. She kind of liked Tony Bennett, you know. Mm. Not any girl singers.
And I think you had this, like, revelatory moment at one point. You were just at home and she was singing some song. And you just look and you say, "Oh, my God, Judy Garland is in my apartment singing this."
Oh, we used to feel that way a lot about. Sure, absolutely. And the thing about Judy Garland was that she was maybe more fascinating just to be with and hang out than she was on the screen or the concert hall. She was a fast. She had a very, very riveting personality.
Was she a very emotional person?
I don't really think so, and I don't think she was a tragedy figure particularly.
Wow!
I think she really liked to have fun.
That
and she liked burning the candles at both ends, as I did. You know, she liked to stay up for 3 or 4 days, and then she would sleep for 3 or 4 days, and then not eat for a long time, and then just scarf for 3 hours and have just milkshakes and all kinds of things like
man,
that.
Man, I wish she were alive today. She can come over to my place. We had a great time.
Well, she wasn't emotional. She just sublimated the emotion through, like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but I really did.
I think she probably did.
I really did expect you to say, oh, she cried at sad movies and stuff like that.
Not that I ever could see. No, she liked to screech and holler.
Oh, I can imagine her being a rip and a half.
And lose her temper, you know, but... She was volatile that way, and she would get bummed out at things, but not in a way that she would. I certainly never saw her cry.
Cool. Really?
I saw her lose her temper occasionally, and she saw me lose mine, I'm sure.
Let me ask about a couple of the other people that you also worked with people like Bobby Short.
Bobby was my buddy. I never worked with him.
Oh, but you were.
I subbed for him occasionally at the Hotel Carlisle. You know, in the late 60s, early 70s. And that was fun. I just went in there with his trio. He would call me, say he got sick or something like that.
And what about Nina?
But Bobby and I were travelers together. We went all over the place together. Nina?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of an interesting story. One of the first places that I worked, it was probably the first extended job I had, was a room called the Playroom on West 58th. It was another of those rooms that I mentioned. And Nina's first job in New York was at that place. She was about 4 years older than me, and I arrived at work because I was going to play opposite her, half hour on, half hour off, for 6 hours. And I arrived at the club, and before I walked in opening night, I could hear her voice kind of wafting out onto the street, and I thought, my God, this is an interesting sound. Very, very, I knew it was different from the street. And I walked in, and there was this woman singing. There was nobody in the place to speak of. There might have been 10 customers. And she was weaving a spell. She might not have been the greatest piano player in the world or the greatest singer, but there was some sort of sorcery taking place that was absolutely mesmerizing. And for the next 6 weeks, we played opposite each other. We became very good friends at that period of time. She had made her first album, on which I Loves You, Porgy was one of the tracks, but it had not been released. So nobody knew about her except a few people from Philadelphia, where she had worked quite a bit before. And sometimes there was no one in the place except her and me, but the boss made us do our half hours anyway because he felt that someone would hear the music from the street.
Huh.
And so,
well, it worked for you. You did, yeah.
I would listen to her, and then she would listen to me, and she had a fabulous sense of humor, which you would never expect, so that one time on a Saturday night, there was no one in the joint, and that's what it was a joint. And Nina would just collapse in laughter on the stand. She thought it was the third thing in the world, which it was.
Oh, my goodness.
She was terrific. And then she became a star very quickly. And I think her troubles and her unhappiness started around that time. I think she was unhappy when I knew her, definitely. She had an awful life. She told me about it. But I don't think she could cope with that kind of success. I think it somehow made her angry on a certain level. And by about 62, I didn't see her anymore. And she told me backstage at one of her concerts, I said, when are we going to have lunch together, love? You know, because she was a good friend. And she said, listen, I love you, but you just have to understand that I just don't want to see anybody anymore at this particular time.
Well, I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
She said, I just don't want to see anybody at this particular time, you know.
Wow.
I you know, it's nothing personal. And I asked Bobby Short about this. Imagine this reaction. I said, I didn't understand it. And he said, listen, I do understand it. Just let it lay. It's no big thing. So that was that.
All these sad characters.
Yeah,
man.
Right? Well, who is your, of all the performers and well, everybody else that you've run across, do you have any one other special particular?
Yes, one other.
Oh, yeah.
That very, very special, and that was Anita O'Day.
Anita O'Day.
She, I tell you, she was a great, great artist. It had nothing to do with a beautiful voice. She really didn't have much voice, but what she did with it, it was like a fantastic modern sketch, sort of like a Chagall drawing or something like that, and she would sing the chords around the chords of a tune. She would get the gist of a song. She would get the gist of a melody. And she swung. She was absolutely beautiful when she worked. She moved like a dream. And she was like that offstage. I got to know her very, very well.
She swung offstage. No wonder you got to know her well. No, I don't know what that means. What?
But she cooked like a jazz person, and she drove a car like a jazz person.
Yeah.
It was all very kind of broad brush stroke. And I appreciate her now more than ever. It was a great privilege to know her.
Now, I was also reading that, I like to go back into the debauchery of the older days.
When, I feel that you do. I get that picture.
I'm just fascinated by it, I'm telling you. But when you were growing up, someone moved in next door.
Oh, well, that was the key story. That's when I went from being a normal little boy to a very weird cat.
I love this one, though. Wait till you hear who moved in next door.
Well, my father had a townhouse on East 63rd Street opposite the Barbizon Hotel, right in the sort of shadow of the 3rd Avenue L. Some of your older listeners will remember that period. And it was during World War II. And this house that was next door to ours, which had been vacant ever since I was a baby, it was this kind of very strange, like a haunted house next door. Suddenly, the windows were being washed and furniture was being moved in. And suddenly, someone had bought this place. And I was 8 years old, probably. And I, you know, I liked all the things that little boys like model airplanes and pretending to fence with my brother and all these, you know, normal kid things. Well, this very flashy-looking brunette woman moved in, and I used to peer from the second story down into the backyard, and it was the most famous striptease artist in the world, Gypsy Rose Lee.
Oh, wow.
But in 1944, they didn't tell a child at 8
what
a striptease artist was, and my mother wouldn't tell me, and I was, of course, like a child, I was curious, and the teacher, the young teacher at the school I was going to in New York, smirked, which aroused my curiosity even
among
more.
Among other things, yeah.
And I did find out who she was. It didn't exactly, I couldn't quite grasp what all of this was about. But
no, 2 years later you were grasping it, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, what happened, what it did to my sort of forming consciousness and mind and spectrum of interest is I wanted to know about every show that was around on Broadway. Her sister, Gypsy's sister, was June Havoc, also Baby June to some
right.
of the people.
Sure.
And she was in a new show that was on the cover of Life magazine, had her dressed up as the title character of Sadie Thompson. So here was a hooker with a parasol, and June Havoc was in the backyard a lot, too. And so all of this was much more interesting to me than the kind of conservative people around my house. And I thought, this is a bit of all right. And suddenly I became absolutely one track. I wanted to know every song on the hit parade, every movie that was playing in New York, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Boy, you live next door to Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, huh?
Well,
don't
baby
you love it? Listen, I love, now that I'm my age and I'm a certain kind of person now, I look back on that, and I'm very glad it happened.
Oh, my God, it's what a fascinating life.
And it's not over yet. Like, let's not, you know,
no.
Say that it's... Cause
it's far from over.
But
no.
I mean, people who live... You know, you had this great sleaziness follow you, which is not necessarily bad. No, it's sleazy. It ain't easy being sleazy, right?
No,
Bet?
I'm not too sleazy now, though. I really am not. I lead a pretty.
Well, as we get older, we settle down. But I think being sleazy when you're younger is just great.
I do too.
Yeah,
it's great for my singing. You know, I sing a song now in my act called "My Old Flame." I've sung it for a while. It's a Mae West number. Wonderful ballad that became a.
She never came over, did she?
No. Uh-huh. God forbid.
Ian came up and saw her sometime, but
she was a little. She was before my time.
I know, but wouldn't you have loved to have met her?
Oh, God, yes. Did you ever meet her?
No.
Well, no.
But I would love to have met her after she did that really horrible movie in the 70s.
Oh, well, I've heard about that. I have a lot of friends who are around.
You never saw the movie? Go rent it.
Oh, yeah, I never did see it. Was George Hamilton?
No, it was like...
He might have been in it, actually. It was this. It was called Sex or... No, that was her big...
Sex Cat, wasn't that it?
Yes.
Yes, Sex Cat.
Anyway, we kind of have to bring this to a close.
It had like porn stars in it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
everything.
It was totally nuts. Anyway, Charles Cochran, first of all, tell people where they can see you and when.
Oh, yes. I have two more performances, and we got a great review the other day from Stephen Holden. We got a great review, me and my trio. We got a great review from Stephen Holden in the New York Times, and we...
So where are you
playing? We're really doing well. We are at the Metropolitan Room on West 22nd Street in Chelsea. It's between 5th and 6th. It's 34 West 22nd Street, the Metropolitan Room, 7:30. The show is called A Song That Keeps Saying Remember, which is a quote from an Irving Berlin tune.
And when? What are the dates?
Wednesday, the 28th, this coming Wednesday, and December 5th. One show, and it's reminiscences like the ones I'm giving, and it's 12 wonderful, wonderful songs.
Oh, by the way, Charles, I have to, because you're playing December 5th, I have to tell you that a very special day for me, December 5th.
Why?
The King of Thailand's birthday.
So you have to do a special number in
you're
time.
You're kidding. Really?
He's turning 80. I'm going to Thailand just
to
celebrate.
Who's coming from the King and I?
I'm celebrating his birthday over in Thailand because he's such a great ruler. So you have to do something special on the 5th.
In fact, or the Cheshire Cat song.
Well, the March of the Siamese... No, that wouldn't... But it's my birthday on December 6th. So
oh, happy almost.
Wow.
How old will you be or you won't say?
He'll be older than you.
I don't mind telling you. How old do you think I am from talking to me and hearing what
400?
in critic years. Let's see. I'd say 73.
71.
Ooh, okay. I'm close.
So you'll be 70 wonderful years old.
3 miles every day, so that's not too bad.
Good for you, man.
But you didn't
somebody that was at death's door when I was about 26.
Well, you were falling out of bars. What do you
and out of a window once, bouncing on in Malibu. Yeah, but, you know, I was in a condition where I was very flexible.
Mm-hmm. Well, but God loves, was it drunks and idiots or what?
Yeah, I don't know. What's that? No, God loves it. Anyway.
So I know what you're saying. It's something like that. It isn't that.
I know.
I think God loves artists. That's what God loves creative people who share and try and make people happy.
But you know what God really loves?
Nice thing for you to say.
Commercials.
I love it. Okay.
Well, yeah, we have to do some commercials. We have to move on with the program. But gosh, Charles Cochran, go see him this Wednesday, the 28th.
It was
again,
fantastic
5th,
talking to you.
At the Metropolitan Room. A delight. There's so much more to tell. Of course, we'll welcome you back anytime you want to be here in the neighborhood.
Well, thank you very, very much for getting in touch with me.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Keep coming back
like a song. A song that keeps saying, remember. That sweet used to be. That was once you and me. Coming back like an old memory. The perfume of roses in May. Returns to my room in December.
Thank you and good night.
You don't have to pay big bucks on Broadway to enjoy a funny play. You could sit in the comfort of your living room or bedroom and read a whole book of hilarious comedies by the one and only me, Dave Lefkowitz. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with my unique humor, satire, and spoofery. If you like my show, you'll love my book. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it at davesgoneby.org. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. This says it all, doesn't it?
What gives it to me every hour?
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway, too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance, 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511 or PerformingArtsInsider.com. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, it is your everything theater guide. Everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, dance, everything on the stages of New York in Performing Arts Insider.
Does it have off-Broadway?
For this quick edition of Inside Broadway. And then, yes, of course it's off-Broadway. So let's very quickly give our listeners a strike update.
Strike's still on. No shows.
Now, finally, after a week, the Stagehands Union and the producers and theater owners are meeting again. So at least there's some movement there. They've agreed to meet, and they did some meeting today. I don't think there was any kind of a breakthrough, though.
There was no progress. It was the last I heard on the radio.
Which is, you know, amazing to me. I mean, I really thought they would have solved it before Thanksgiving. They did not.
I'm not sure they're going to finish this by New Year's.
They'd be dumb to miss Christmas. I mean, they still have another week or so to not jeopardize that. Well, they've got about 2 weeks to really hammer it out if they want to.
I think right now they've killed Christmas anyway, because people who are going to come here for Christmas are going to say, maybe we won't go to New York for Christmas.
Right, or they're not going to book tickets to things
right.
that aren't. Certainly, you can't book tickets. Well, I guess you could, but
you
would.
You can
yeah.
buy tickets. Well, you bought. It's like a raffle.
But here's a quick update on things. First of all, How the Grinch that stole. Who stole.
How the Grinch
stole
Christmas.
Which was on strike. The producers of that show got an injunction.
Well, because they had had an agreement with the union prior to the strike.
Right.
And
so,
but the Jurjamsons who own
the theater owners said, look, either the union plays in all our houses or they don't play at all. So they were being the real hard asses in this particular case. And so the producers of The Grinch said, no, wait a minute, we have a different deal with you. Let us play. We want to play. We're here. We're only on a very limited time. And we're a big budget thing, and we play about 12 shows a week. We're entitled. They went to a judge. The judge gave them an injunction. So at least for the time being, How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
The Grinch is going to be stealing Christmas for a little while.
So will Young Frankenstein still running? So is
Pygmalion.
Pygmalion. Mauritius closed today, so that's out of the picture. Xanadu's open.
The Ritz.
The Ritz, 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee and Young Frankenstein. Sorry if I'm... And
Cymbeline.
At Lincoln Center. Also, well, and the effect of the strike is starting to accumulate.
I'm surprised Mauritius closed. I would have...
kept it open a little longer, wouldn't you? Little Mermaid had to postpone its opening date. It was supposed to open on December 6th. Not sure when it will.
I heard Rock and Roll may not open now.
Rock and Roll opened already. The Tom Stoppard play opened. Yes, it opened. I saw it, and it had an official opening. Whether it reopens after the strike, hard to tell. Gypsy of the Year had to postpone its thing by 2 weeks. That's the big spoof that the choristers do of all the Broadway shows. It's a benefit for Broadway Cares Equity Fights.
But
AIDS.
I just think that letting them do it, no matter strike or no strike, because it's a
benefit.
But
they had to postpone it 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's going to be on December 17th and 18th instead of the first week of December. And then August, Osage County, the new play from Chicago by Tracy Letts, that may be a real Tony contender. Mm. They've already added 3 weeks to the end of their run to make up for the strike. So assuming that they do open, they're going to run long
enough.
You know
what I want to know is these people who have these equity contracts, these short-term, like the people from London.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of London casts that are in New York. Are they going to be able to extend beyond their contract because they're missing these 3 or 4 weeks or whatever the strike is?
I have no idea how that... I mean, it's going to turn into an exponential mess as this goes on and on. But as I said, there are some shows on Broadway running, and who knows? Might be an 11th-hour breakthrough tomorrow, sometime this week. Maybe not. Stay tuned. We'll tell you on Inside Broadway. My God, it's midnight already, so I just want to tell you about a couple of quick off-Broadway shows that I saw over the past week or two, because all of off and off-off-Broadway is running and opening, open during the strike.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a show called Scythe at the Irish Repertory Theater.
How was it?
It was quite good, I must say. And one of the things to see about it was, if you thought that Martin McDonagh came out of nowhere. Now, he's the guy who did Beauty Queen of Lenan and The Lonesome West.
Lenan.
And plays like that. He's really... The plays set in impoverished little villages of Ireland where people are really kind of... Bad things happen to sometimes eccentric people. and people are like, wow, what a special talent he is, where you get these ideas, where this comes from. It came from John B. Keane. I've seen now two things of his. Keane did The Field, a play that Irish Rep did last year that I just saw on film with Richard Harris. Pretty good movie. And now they also did a play of his called Scythe. And it's like a McDonagh play, only from 40, 50 years ago.
Mexico just means... All Irish people are crazy.
They're really... Or it's about this young girl, this virgin, and they want to marry her off to this person because he'll give the family money, but she's in love with this other boy. And so there's all these machinations going on, and it does not end well. And it starts slowly, as these things do. But it gets you, and it's a good job at the Irish Rep. I think it closed tonight, though, so you can't see it, but I recommend having seen it. Mildly. Very mild, not quite a recommendation, though, for Joy Luck Club at Pan Asian Rep. It's kind of dull. Now, I have to say, I was a little jet-lagged and lack of sleep when I saw it. So I was nodding off at points, and it may not have been the play's fault.
It could have been the Joy Luck Club.
But I think if the play had been a little more interesting and
it's a women's play.
It is. It's about all these young Asian women and their mothers' stories, and how the children don't necessarily relate to the mothers until they really learn what their parents went through.
And the problem is you're neither young nor Asian,
Asian
nor a woman.
Or female. Fair enough. Fair enough. Some parts were enjoyable, entertaining, not quite moving, but at least you were interested. And other parts, like, just kind of sat there like, eh, it drags. And I don't think I'm alone in really feeling that.
There was no joy in the Ruck Club.
And the one nice thing to really see about it, it was a big cast. And you don't see that off-Broadway. There were about 15 people on stage. Now, some of them community theater-level acting. But just nice to see a cast where not everybody has to double five times because the producers don't have the money for a bunch of people on stage. Can't recommend the Joy Luck Club, but you know, Pan Asian Rep sometimes does pretty good work.
But if you want to see a lot of people on stage, go see it.
Yeah, you're going to look at a lot of folks at the end, bowing. Go see Joy Luck Club. Get there like 5 minutes before the end. Anyway, we're like 5 minutes before the end of this show. Got to do a commercial. We'll be back with a little more of Dave's Gone By. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. You rock! Yeah, yeah, you rock! You know what else rocks? Mortgages rock! Yeah, because MortgagesRock.com gives you the chance to help your friends get the loans they need. College loans, home improvement, new trailer, MortgagesRock.com helps you help them. And the more work you do, the more commission you get. Full service, fully licensed, MortgagesRock.com has real experts on the phone, at the website, in the office, making you a bigger, better broker. MortgagesRock.com, we're making money never sounded so good. Rock on, mortgages! Psst, you wanna buy a watch? No? How about a dishwasher? Vacation to Europe? Well, what's wrong with selling my stuff this way? How else? Advertise on Dave's Gone By? Take a 30 or 60 second ad on the radio? I can't afford that. I can, and I'll reach thousands of listeners all over America? Well, how do I? DavesGoneBy.org has all the info. Rate card and everything? Done deal. Hey, before I go, wanna buy a raincoat full of watches? Shalom, damn it, shalom, damn it, that's the name of my TV show. Wednesday morning, 7:30, Channel 20 is where to go. See the one and only Rabbi Saul Solomon on TV. DavesGoneBy.org has the details and a link to the show on YouTube. I read the Torah, I tell stories, shake my fist and complain a lot. So Wednesday morning, 7:30, Channel 20 is the spot for Shalom Dammit.
Hello, listeners out in Radioland. This is Jason Graw, star of Cabaret. I know that's an oxymoron. Telling you to please tune into WGBB's Dave's Gone By.
And yes, you are tuned in to the last couple of minutes of Dave's Gone By on WGBB with me, Dave Lefkowitz, and my guest co-host, Jeffrey Goodman. Thank you so much for being with us in the neighborhood, and thanks especially to Charles Cochran. Please go see him at the Metropolitan Room this Wednesday, 7:30, in Manhattan. I went to the club last week to see Marilyn May. It's a nice place to see a cabaret show.
Beautiful room.
Oh, so you've been, who did you see there?
It was so long ago. Who remembers?
Oh, okay. Well, I saw it a week or so ago, and it's a nice little club. And he'll be there this Wednesday, November 28th, and December 5th. So go see Charles Cochran.
Which, of course, is the King of Thailand's birthday.
So if you forget the actual date, just remember it's the Thai King's big, big happy celebration day.
It's happy, happy, joy, joy day.
And happy, happy, Joyce Joyce, my beloved and wonderful and adorable wife. Thank you her so much.
Thank you. Congratulations on the pregnancy.
Now stop that. And thank you to our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press.
The Happy Kings of Broadway.
1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine.
The Bible of Broadway.
And by the way, Dave's Gone By listeners get a huge discount on annual subscriptions to Performing Arts Insider. Go to PerformingArtsInsider.com to find out all about that. MortgagesRock.com. They do.
The Mortgage Kings of Broadway.
Yep, yep. Well,
right. Everyone has to be king of Broadway.
Yeah, on this particular episode, sure. Yeah. But the main thing is, you can get loans and financing.
You can become a bigger,
better broker.
Broker
at MortgagesRock.com. And finally, 516-797-3229 is the number of fancy schmancy balloons.
The party kings of Broadway.
So, if you have to decorate a party, any kind, if you're going to have a holiday party, Christmas, Hanukkah,
if you're going to have a party for the King of Thailand's birthday.
How can you not have these things, how can you have them without balloons and without centerpieces if you're doing a big shindig like a wedding or anything that involves the word.
Sweet 16.
Can't believe I used the word shindig. But there you go. If you have a shindig, fancy schmancy balloons is the place to call. 516-797-3229. Time for the reminders. Dave's Gone By on TV Friday mornings, 7:30 on Channel 20 of Woodbury of Long Island.
7:30 in the morning.
I know. Hey, if you're not watching Peggy, oh no, she's on the news now. So who are the people on the forums?
Meredith Vieira.
Yeah, right. And Matt Lauer and those people. Flip over to Channel 20 on Fridays and hear old episodes of Dave's
Gone By. And besides,
Meredith
Vieira's on for like 5 hours in the morning now.
So I'm
give up half an hour.
Channel 20. And don't forget that Channel 20 on Wednesday mornings at 7:30.
I have a crazy rabbi.
Shalom Gamet with Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader. And it's his Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour here at every Wednesday morning, 7:30.
But it's only half an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, he likes to expand things. It's a grandiosity.
It's a gassy thing.
And remember, you can watch all his current episodes at YouTube.com anytime at all under the keyword Shalom Dammit. And don't forget to listen to Filler Up Saturday afternoons at 5:30 on this station, AM 1240, WGBB. And let's see, listen or watch also on YouTube myself, Jeff Goodman, and Charles Gross in Two on the Aisle is the theater review show that we all do sometimes. And
we all love so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a good show.
It's America's favorite theater review theater review show with two people.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great promo right there, Jeff. Now, unfortunately, I didn't leave any time to talk about San Francisco. I'll do that next week. And
tell us about the dead uncle.
Yeah, well, that's where I spent half my day today. We had a funeral for my uncle, Lester Pinkow, who passed way too young, didn't even make it to 60. But it was, you know, it was unexpected in a certain way because he'd been on some level getting better, but also expected because he's been having this chronic terrible blood problem for months. So I want to give my condolences to my Aunt Bonnie and to the kids. Josh. And great seeing them. Well, not great seeing them today, but they're holding up amazingly well under the circumstances.
They're super duper troopers.
And Lester was a super duper classy guy. And he's,
and he will be missed.
Absolutely. Anyway, don't. There's no segue I can do after that. That won't sound crass. But don't miss next week's program, which is...
Unfortunately, Uncle Harold will.
Well, you will, too. You're going to be in Thailand.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So Jeff's going to be gone for a couple of weeks, but I will be here again, live, next week, December
2nd. But the people in my house can only stay there for 2 weeks at a time.
Exactly. For the 249th episode of Dave's Gone By. So until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff on his way to Thailand Goodman.
Wishing you good night. See you on the other side of the tracks.
And gone by.
So I'm off and running over the rail. Going gunning after the quail. Off and running, send me the mail to the great big world on the other side. The crazy world on the father's side. The great big world on the other side of the tracks. On the other side of the tracks, that is where I'm gonna be. On the other side of that great divide between fame and fortune and me. Gonna put my shadows behind me, give my inhibitions the axe. And tomorrow morning you find me on the other side of the tracks, on the other side of that line, where life is fancy and free. Gonna sit and fan on a fat divan while the butler bottles my tea. Well, for now I'm facing the fences, can't afford to relax. When the whole caboodle commences on the other side of the tracks, I'm off and running over the rail, going gunning after the quail, up and running.